No. And then it'll take a second to say it's recording.
Yesterday.
Oh, okay.
There. Webinar.
So I was like, shoot. Just like we can have like our fall and winter.
I was like 90 degrees and I went and got my sweater. So I was like, ow.
I'm
going to
get this sweater. I'm doing it. I know. I was like, I'm going to drive home. I don't know. It's probably an umbrella.
It's 1 o'clock, and we have a busy agenda, so we're going to go ahead and get started. Just so that those of you in here know, our quick share is down, so we're but Montana's working on it, so we're just not going to be able to project on the big screen. So, board members, you have your votes. You can follow along with the agenda and what we're doing that way.
What does this do for those?
So those on Zoom, you guys will be able to see the slideshow. Okay,
that is the
Well, I just want to welcome everybody here. We're all excited about this rain. I know we're thrilled, and I have a daycare of some little children coming in their new raincoats. They're just so they're so excited. It's kind of nice to have a change take place. It's very loud right now.
Yeah.
So I just want to welcome everybody here and thank you for coming. It's another 2 months to come by. It's just blows me away. Just as a reminder for public attendees, join this meeting. That we will have time throughout the meeting to make public comments related to the agenda item. As long as time is permitted. And there also, you'll see it indicated in the agenda. And our presenters are really good at asking for questions. Please, if you do have a question, indicate by the raised hand. And we'll be watching that pretty close. So we'll see if anybody has a raised hand. So moving on, I just do want to make note that Jamie fitness here for Jody. So thank you for
wanting to like me a lot. She treated it that way for me.
Oh, that's nice. That helps too. So I guess we're hoping everybody on the board has had an opportunity to look over the minutes. And so I'm going to ask at this time for a motion to accept the minutes from the July 13th, 2022 meeting.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Is there any discussions or anything that anybody noticed in the minutes that you see?
Somebody's got a problem.
Sorry. That's right. So we'll go ahead and take a vote. Those all in favor, please say aye. Or aye. Online,
aye.
Raise your hands.
Aye.
Thank you.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. Minutes are accepted. Okay, so during our last meeting, there was some questions about the CCDF matching fund, and we have invited Keisha Calloway here, the fiscal grant manager, to help provide an update for that. So I'm going to turn the time over to Keisha. Did I say that correct?
This is Keisha, but I'll be presenting. Keisha is relatively new.
This is Joe Edmond.
Joe Edmond.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, hi, Keisha.
So I'm a fiscal grant manager for Workforce Services, and as Rhonda was saying, I understand from the last meeting there were some questions around child care match and how that worked. So I wanted to address those questions and maybe give you an overview of that and then answer any other budget questions that you might have. I'm looking for the slide. I just deleted it out of my slide. So So CCDF gives the department or awards the department funding every year, and it's broken up into different pieces that some of the pieces need to be used within 1 year, some of the pieces within 2 years, then we've got 3 years to use the other piece. And MAC is a two-year piece. Every year they give us approximately $27 to $28 million of match funding that we are allowed to spend, but to draw these funds down, we need to put up a certain percentage of state spending on child care. And that fluctuates a little bit from year to year based on the different rates that the feds provide, but roughly to draw down the full $27 million, we need to spend $10.3 million of state funds to meet our match requirement. And we do that largely through third-party agreements we have with our partner agencies who are spending funds, public funds, on child care. And they agreed to allow us to use those expenses to draw down our federal dollars, which in turn helps fund the child care program. And so $10.3 million to draw down the full $27 million, and to give you some context of where we're at with that, for the 22 grant, for state fiscal year 22, we were able to identify $8.8 million of state funds. So we're a little bit short on what we'd like to see for that 22 grant, but again, it's a two-year grant, so we have this year to meet that requirement and draw down all $27 million. And we're on target to do that. We think we'll have no problem drawing that down, and eventually drawing down the 23 funding as well. And we haven't turned back any federal funding for MATCH since, I think, 2012 was the last time we turned down back a little bit of funding, because we couldn't draw the full amount down or meet our MATCH requirement. I think that covers those items. I did want to talk a little bit about what kind of expenses qualify to count as match. I mentioned that our partners allow us to identify, or they identify expenses that they allow us to use to draw these funds down. And those expenses, they need to be for the purposes of child care for kids up through the age of 13, and they need to be public funds that are not federal funds, and they're not already being used to draw down federal funds. Those are the basic requirements of these expenses that we're using as match. And with that, I'll open it up for questions.
Sorry. I know you can't see the slides because they're not up, but there is one of the slides that talks about the limit for the pre-K.
Okay. Oh, 30% limit, yeah. So of the $10.3 million that we need to identify as our state share to draw down the match, we are capped at 30% of that. No more than 30% of that can be for pre-K or kindergarten type expenses. And we have no problem. It seems like those are easier expenses to identify. So we have no problem meeting the 30% requirement. It's the other 70% that we focus on to try and beef that up so we don't run into any problems drawing down funds.
Question for you. So of that 10.3, I get it that 30% is pretty easy to go after from state pre-K kindergarten expenditures. What does the office receive directly from, you know, the state budget that is not part of these interagency agreements?
Generally,
some cash from the legislature.
Well, generally very little, if any. They do give us the $4.4 million of MOE. The maintenance of effort. And they do provide funding for school readiness, which is a preschool program, so that that can help with the 30%. And occasionally they will fund a other type of child care program, but typically we are relying on third party.
Okay, so the 4.4 MOE does not go towards the 10.3?
It does not.
Gotcha. Okay. So the 27.7 is only the matching funds. What's the base grant?
So there's a $12 million piece that needs to be spent out every year. That's mandatory. There's also another, I want to say, $80 million-ish that we have of discretionary funds in the typical CCDF grant that we get. And then the last couple years, we've had some COVID funding that was added on top of that.
Question for you.
Yeah.
So the 10.3 million, that only has to be found over a 2-year period of time.
Yes.
Okay. To pull down the 27.7.
Yeah,
that's for 2 years.
We'll pull it down. You know, as we reach the $10 million, we'll pull down the corresponding amount of $27 million. So.
Okay.
So if it takes us 2 years to identify the $10 million, then we'll spend the $27 million over that.
So if you were to have the $10.3 million every year, would you be able to pull down $27 million each year?
Yes, that's what we would.
So we are leaving money on the table because we're not fully pulling down $27 million every year.
Well, we're not turning it back to the feds because we are eventually spending it in year two. We could spend it faster.
Okay, so it is only $27 million over 2 years. It's not
$54 million.
Yeah.
So yeah, we got $27 million for 22 that we have 2 years to spend,
okay.
And another $27 million for 23 that we have 2 years to spend. So every year we get another.
Okay, so every year you get $27 million, but you have 2 years to spend it.
Yes.
2 years to get the matching.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
That's why we didn't answer your questions last time. It's a
joke.
So,
go ahead.
Joe, I mean, over the next, you said we haven't sent any back since 2012, so, I mean, are you fairly confident that we'll continue to get that $10.3 million spent?
I'm confident with the 22 money that we'll get that spent, and pretty confident with the 23 money as well. Beyond that, I'd like to see us be able to draw down the full $27 million within four quarters or 1 year, the first year. And it looks like it's taking us maybe 5 years to do, 5 quarters to do that. And so we're slowly following behind, and eventually we would run into problems if we don't beef up our our state match.
Okay, and again, you're hitting that 10.3 with these agreements with, is it just state agencies and State Board of Education, or are there agreements with, you know, county agencies and cities that are...
There's cities. We've worked with the county at some point. I'm not sure if we're currently working with them or not. After-school programs, even nonprofits in the past. I don't know if we're working with nonprofits currently, but school districts. Am I missing anybody, Megan?
No, it's pretty much school districts. Whenever nonprofits have any sort of claim from any donations that they receive,
we
get those.
Okay.
And the school self, the school districts are putting money towards after school, and that doesn't have to count towards the 30%, because that's just pre-K and kindergarten, right?
Most of the time, sorry, I don't want to interrupt, most of the time school districts use their Title I funding to do the match, and so they can only use that towards the preschool projects.
Gotcha. Okay. So obviously, if we were successful in getting the legislature to appropriate more dollars, that would go.
That would make things simpler.
A lot easier. Okay. We just, Elizabeth has her marching orders. So.
So it has to be spent within the fiscal year that the match is considered from.
The federal fiscal year, yes.
The federal fiscal year,
yeah.
Which is
October 1 through September 30th.
And so the I forget the name of that. Is it the readiness board, the ones that administer the preschool, the high school, the Utah School Readiness Board? The state money that flows through them, because it's identified as pre-K, only goes towards the 30%.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Well, could we be a little more creative in how we're allocating that money so that it doesn't... I mean, it's probably not being used. There's enough kindergarten money being spent at the 30%, you would think, easily, right?
I mean, I don't think there's a problem in getting to the 30% that you're allowed to use. Correct.
Yeah, it's the...
Or it's the
above. Yeah, but more.
No, but if this money that's going through the... whatever the school readiness board is, some of that money is going to private child care providers for their preschool programs within the private child care, but maybe there's a more creative way of identifying those dollars through the appropriations process so that it doesn't come out as pre-K and it comes out as a child care expenditure. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The unfortunate part with that pot of money is that when COVID hit, the legislature freaked out about budgets, and they actually transferred some of that pot of money that was state funding into federal funding because they thought they were going to have to make cuts, and so we still need to get that money turned back.
Yeah, it's time
funding.
To work on that, but as we do it, there might be a way to identify that differently.
Do you have requirements for them and let it be for younger kids? Not just preschool.
But I think just if it's, you know, at the very least, if it's money, if you've got private providers who have been awarded those dollars, maybe at the very least that could be looked at as a child care expense. Just on paper, just on the budget side of things, not in the practical application of it, but maybe, you know, there might be other opportunities.
Like Joe, could correct us, but I think even if it was going to a private provider, if it's for preschool activity, right. Then it has to count towards that 30% preschool cap.
I'll bet we got people in the appropriations process that can figure this out. We gave them the idea, but there's a way to do this.
It probably requires some statutory changes because the legislation is very clear that it's for preschool services for 3, 4, and 5 year olds, and it defines what high quality preschool is. So
there might be a statute change that would be required, but if they understood the reason for it, it didn't really change the ultimate outcome.
Well, I think overall I'd like to see the legislature invest more, so not messing around with what that pot is, but getting additional money into child care.
I get that, and I'm with you. But I've been with you on that for 30 years now. So.
Let's make it happen, Johnny.
We do have a question or a remark from Kristen. Can they provide a breakdown of the current match funding by school, district, city, et cetera?
We could break that down, yeah. I don't have that available
right now. No.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like I remember a concerted effort, and we can talk about this later, but Rebecca, it might be worth us, like, exploring again what we did in the past, because I remember being a part of that effort when we were returning state or federal funds.
Okay.
And, like, looking at the nonprofit sector on how can we identify some of those funds. So I do think that there are some other creative ways. It just takes some work. And if we're at risk of doing that, want to get back to that four-quarter thing, I think it's probably worth the time to do that until we get some additional state funding.
And with the current after-school grants that we've done, we saw that we wanted to increase the third-party match, and we've implemented some changes there too. They went into effect last fall, I think, so we haven't fully seen the impact of that yet, but we expect that to help some.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Any more questions? No, thank you.
Okay. Sure. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we're just going to go ahead and move on to Rebecca and her director's update.
Great. I have it on my notes. I just want to sure cover the right thing in the right area. So there's a couple of things I wanted to update you, provide an update on during my update. The first one is, if you recall last meeting, I indicated that the Office of Child Care was in the process of developing a division-wide strategic plan to help us really focus our efforts and identify where we want to go over the next couple of years. We have finished our division strategic plan, and Montana, is that on the next slide? Here's a copy of our division strategic plan. I just want to highlight a couple of things for you. If you recall, I mentioned that our department has a department strategic plan based on four cornerstones that that we focus on, which are employee success, customer experience, community connection, and then operational excellence. As a leadership team, and with help from all of our division, we identified what are some key things that we want to work on and to focus on and to create further goals and strategies around those four areas. So in employee success, we are committed in working to ensure that our staff have opportunities to grow and develop their skills and their abilities to support child care programs. We look at our staff, they oversee many contracts, and so we want to build their leadership skills, their subject matter experts out in the field. And so our part of our employee success is really just the professional development of our own team. Under customer experience, so the three things we want to focus on there is we want to just make sure we have open communication with providers, partners. This board is a way that we can help do that, to provide information and to get feedback. We want to make sure that we have proactive customer education for families. The work around our Care About Child Care website and the work we do with our Care About Child Care agencies, ensuring that really that part of that customer experience is ensuring that that families know how to access child care options and where they can get more information. And then we also want to look and develop pathways and resources for families with unique needs where traditional child care may not be may be inaccessible. And that's really, you know, as we've talked about, how do we create better pathways and better access opportunities for families that need after-hour care, need care for children that have special needs. And so looking at maybe some key target populations and how we can, over the next 3 years, develop more better access and better support for those families. Under community connection, we will be coordinating with our partners and stakeholders, ensuring that we have ways that we can understand the needs and the potential gaps in either our service delivery or the services that we offer. Excuse me. We are one agency of many in the Department of Workforce Services, and so we want to make sure we have a good communication with all of our divisions to ensure that the customers that maybe are working with our Workforce Development Division or our Refugee Services Office, that they are aware of the child care programs that we offer, and so we can help connect families that are engaged with the department in other areas to help them if we can help provide the service that they need. And then we also want to work as a division to support the youth and early care professionals. A lot of the work we do is around technical assistance and program support to our Care About Child Care agencies that offer professional development and training and opportunities to help support the whole workforce. And so having some key initiatives in some schools around develop or helping the entire early youth and early care workforce. Under operational excellence, our two goals. One is a huge goal. We have several technology portals that we use. We have a Care About Child Care website. We have our provider portal. We have different avenues that the public and our partners engage with the department. And we really want to look and see technology and be really purposeful about how do we use our systems better and streamline them so that we don't just keep adding more, but we build out our Care About Child Care website and our portals so that they can help better support the work that we do. And then also number one goal is to make sure that we're complying with our CCDF rules and regulations. And so have opportunities throughout the year to just ensure, review our program guidelines and make sure that we are within our the statutory requirements and that we are meeting the outcomes that are required from our federal funding sources and state funding sources. These are high level, but I just want to let you know what I've asked is for each of our managers and our teams now to do is look at their individual programs and their individual teams and develop some strategies and some tactics on how they're going to accomplish that. So when it comes to communicating with under customer experience, number one, communicating with providers and partners through efficient, accurate professional support, our professional development team may look at doing something that they want to do around that area with the partners that they work out. Our subsidy team, they do monthly webinars, and that may be something that they want to continue to do under that. And so each program will have real specific activities and that they will do under each of this. So we thought it was important as an advisory board for you to know what we're focused on and what we're looking at, and I'd love some feedback. If you have questions or feedback this time. All right, I'll continue on to the next agenda item, and you can, if you have more, you can let me know. I also wanted to give you an update on the employer startup grants. If you recall, during the legislative session, there was a bill, House Bill 15, that was ran, and it required our department to use some of our COVID relief funding to provide startup grants for employers that will partner with a child care provider to provide child care opportunities on site or near site for their employees. I want to let you guys know that as early as next week, we're going to be releasing a grant to select an entity that will oversee the startup grants for employers. We want the grantee to market the program to employers, to be in charge of making the connections with the child care provider, with the employers, and working out, really overseeing that project. And so, like I said, we're going to be releasing a grant opportunity as early as next week for an entity to be able to bid and apply to receive those funds. Any questions about the employer startup grant? Another thing, sorry, I did want to also share. With House Bill 15, when it talked about the employer startup grant, in addition to the employer grant, it also asked us to ensure that we are using some of our startup funding for startup grants for regulated residential child care providers. Now, we already have startup grants through our Care About Child Care agency for family providers. But one thing that we looked at and we did is we just want to make sure that we were covering all of the provider types that are residential or regulated residential providers. And so our office will be working with the Care About Child Care agencies to ensure that we are meeting all of the provider types so that those funds are accessible to more people.
Is there a plan to increase the amount that the Family Child Care Startup Grants are able to cover?
You know, we haven't looked to increase the amount. A lot of the Care About Child Care agencies increased the amount with some of the COVID funding we gave to them for initiative. And so those have been increased throughout the state. But we haven't, as part of this legislation, we haven't looked at increasing that amount.
Okay. Do we know generally where they stand, like what amount they cover right now? Is it 500, 1,000?
Ask Carrie. We have Carrie Phillips, who's part of my staff over here. I'm going to ask Carrie if she has the answer to that.
Yes, it varies. The lowest amount is 1,000. Some go higher than that in other regions that have more need, but the lowest is 1,000.
Thank you. Any other questions about startup grants?
I did have one question.
Yeah.
So on the RFP that you're about to put out, is that for like someone to oversee like the distribution, potential distribution of grant money?
Yeah, we would like that entity to develop what those contracts would look like. It's required that there's a contract between a child care provider and an employer. So we want this individual to really oversee that whole project, that entity. So they market, do outreach to employers. They help oversee those contracts between the provider, the child care provider, and the employer, and then also provide that funding, and then we can reimburse them for those grants.
So there'll be like a certain amount of money that's like earmarked for like the administration of it, and then a certain part that's put into a pot for reimbursement for the project.
Yeah, we have set aside $5 million for those grants. And so part of that, the grant proposal, is the entity would let us know this is how much we would need for the administration, and then the rest would be available for the grants to the child care providers.
So would those grants be things that would cover, like, help to cover tuition, or just grants to help cover operating costs?
It's really about startup grants. So it's some of those one-time funds that would be needed to help equipment, materials, supplies, to bring on a new child care center. Look for all the details next week. We announce our grants on our website, so check back, and when that comes available, I'll make sure that we send those out to you guys, and you can share it with your networks as well. Don't we go to the next one? I have the next, like, three agenda items. I do have an advisory committee membership update. First, I understand, I believe, David Alsop is online. We introduced him as a new committee member last meeting, but he was not here. So I was wondering, Dave, if you just want to introduce yourself really quick and let us know a little bit about yourself.
Sure. My name is David Alsop. I am the Vice President and Head of HR here at UltraDent Products. We are a dental manufacturer here in Utah that we have over 1,800 people across the world that we are on a mission to improve dental and oral health across the world with the instruments, products, and tools that we provide to dentists that many of you have in your mouths is pretty likely. So we're very passionate about culture here, so that's why I'm on the committee to represent and provide perspective as needed. We just got named the number 5 best workplace in manufacturing production in America by Fortune magazine, so it's a great time for our company and a great time for us to connect in the community. Before that, I spent 13 years traveling around the country for Kraft Foods, that's now Kraft Heinz. So my background is really in HR and sales, where I started out, and I've just got a huge passion for inclusion, culture, and understanding our history to do better in the future. So it's great to be here, and I look forward to helping where I can.
Great. Thank you. Well, being connected to the business community, we're going to ask you to really help with that last project we talked about, with the employer startup grant. So thanks, David. We're glad to have you.
Thank you.
Welcome. I do have another membership update. Deb Tilley has been serving on our advisory committee for quite a long time. She owns some pizza companies and has sold those that business, and she was representing a small business as her role here on the committee. And so with the selling of that business, she is going to move on and do something different, and will no longer be on this committee. So we do have a vacancy representing small businesses. I was looking through the statute and kind of reviewing. We actually have a couple of additional people beyond what the statute has that have been on the committee. One is Julie Backlund. She has been serving in the position representing family child care providers. That actually is not a position listed in the statute. So I reached out to Julie and I said, we have a vacancy as a small business. You run a small business. I want to keep you engaged. Would you be willing to fill the small business vacancy and support that role? And then we would not backfill the family vacancy to help us fit within the statute. And she agreed to do that. And so I just want to let this committee know. Is any questions or concerns about that? All right. Great. Thank you. Can I just go on to the next one? The next agenda item too. Yeah. All right. This is our traditional update on our COVID relief funding. For those that are new to the board or new here, I've been reporting each time we meet on some of the COVID relief funding that we received. This time for our update, I wanted to let you know we have part of that House Bill 15 that I mentioned earlier. It requires the Office of Child Care to produce an annual report about how we spent our COVID relief funds in the last fiscal year, what those projects were, how much we spent, and what those outcomes were. So I'll tell you, go to the next page. I'm just going to give you a little preview. DWS, our department, we issue an annual report every fall. It comes out in October. And so we have added this requirement as part of our annual report out. And so when that is published and issued, and we will send a copy to you when that comes, you will see that we have created a chart here that lists the funding source, because we have many funding sources for our COVID relief project, the project name, a brief description, some of the outcomes and the effectiveness that happened within the previous fiscal year, the total amount allocated, and then how much was expended. When you look at this, you'll see that there is a lot more money allocated than spent, because some of these funds are multiple year grants, and so they can be spent out over multiple years. So I want to let you guys know this is how we are going to be accounting for that requirement, and it will be published soon, but I just want to give you a sneak peek. Any questions about this? When it's released, if you have questions about specific projects, you can definitely reach out to me in our office and we can get one answered for you. Do the next one. The thing that has taken up a lot of our division's time over the last couple of months has been the workforce bonus grants. This has been an awesome project that we've been able to do with $20 million of our CRSA funding, but it has been a huge project. When we decided to offer a workforce bonus this spring and announce that it was coming, we had to develop all the policies, write the program, develop technology, write an application, train staff, get information out, and collect applications within just a couple of months' time period. So we received, our applications were open to the workforce, or the youth and early care workforce. They were open from July 19th to August 31st, and in that time, we received just under 10,000 applications of individuals that would be eligible for $2,000 is what the amount was. As of last week, but actually to date this morning, so I'm going to read you some information that's a little bit different than what you see on the slide. We have approved over 7,500 applications. My team has been working around the clock. I think I saw someone logged in at 4 o'clock this morning, just trying to process applications. All of our applications have to be approved by September 30th, because that's when that funding expires. So we are trying to get everything approved the last day next week, so we have a week buffer that we've built in. And so we're continuing to process applications.
So
So is that 7,400 additional on top of the 9,800 that you've approved?
Oh, 98 were how many applications we received. Yeah, total. Yeah. Okay. The applications that, the 7,500, we've actually approved $14 million that has been sent out to individuals in the form of checks. And so we've pushed out a lot of our money. I think total we'll end up spending about $19 million for this project. We still have over 1,000 applications that are waiting to be reviewed. One thing that we've noticed is we've had to send back about 40% of our applications because a form wasn't signed, something wasn't correct when we looked at childcare licensing.
Sole proprietor.
Yeah, so by the time we've spent about 40%, we think that really by the time my team's done, we will have looked at and processed 14,000 applications. And so it's really exciting, and this has been a huge effort. And it's interesting to hear my team talk about when they review these applications and they make these approvals, really thinking about the individual that's getting this funding and how it's a huge amount that they have that thanks them for being part of the workforce, for hanging in there, and for maintaining and staying in the workforce. But it's been really rewarding for my team, and although it's been busy, rewarding to go through these applications and this project. So this has been really what we've spent most of our time doing the last couple of weeks, and we'll continue for the next 2 weeks.
It's been a Herculean effort.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you guys for helping your team through that.
I had a question, though. I have a couple, or I know that quite a few family child care providers have employees that help, but they don't necessarily get paid all that often, if ever. I have some of my older boys that have helped and helped me for years and years and years, but they've always kind of just never really received an actual paycheck. Do we need to work out a paycheck for them before they can qualify for this, or...
So
how does that work?
Really what the eligibility is for this is we looked at the role that they have in child care licensing. So if you have individuals that are, if you mentioned family or family providers, if they're household members, they were not eligible for this bonus. If they were child caregivers, and so that's what their role is indicated in licensing, or another role, one of the eligible roles, I think there's 7, then they would be eligible. We do ask that to prove that they are working and they are employed, we're asking for either a pay stub or for an employment verification that their employer can fill out saying this is who this individual is, this is the when they get paid, how much, and then just they do need to be in a paid position.
Okay, so it does need to be a paid position.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that sounds good.
Any other questions, comments? Anything online? Great. I believe that is all that I have. Thank you.
Great. So, looks like we're going to turn the time over to Carrie Beigler for the Care About Child Care Regional Pilot, which I'm really glad that we're continuing.
Thank you. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it. And yes, I am grateful for some nice cooler weather too, because it's been about 110 down here and we're about tired of it. So we're ready for fall to come. So as you can see, for our COVID relief money, we have focused basically on about 9 areas. And Montana, if you can go to the first slide, the next slide, then I'll just kind of go through some of these. And if you have any questions, just chime right on in. Our first one is we have a lot of rural child care providers. And what we wanted to do was really offer them some basic business courses through Southwest Tech. And they have been working with SUU to provide CEUs. So we've provided one of those courses so far. The problem that we've run into with this, unfortunately, is finding that instructor. So we have found another instructor with SUU, and so we're getting ready to start our second business course for some of our rural providers, and we're definitely getting that information out and marketing it so that we can get as many as we can in the classroom. Any questions on that? The next slide, please. This is expanding our rural outreach. I know that we talked a little bit about that outreach and working with new family child care providers. So right now in our rural areas, we're really marketing as best we can so that we can support anybody who is new and wants to be a family child care provider. So I've been doing lots of traveling and talking on the phone and paying for lots of different things so that family child care, we can boost up that family child care down here in our area. 5 and 6 County, there are some areas where there's no child care, and so we're really pushing it in that area and helping these women and these men become family child care and licensed, and also providing the business courses for them so that they can be successful at what they do. And then the next part, which is your next slide, is the child care center grant. And right now, if any of you guys know about CNAB, we've been searching for family child care, any child care in CNAB. We do have a center that should open up really soon. We've been out there several times working with a husband and wife team who have opened up a program, and due to a baby being born, which kind of threw them off just a little bit, we should see this in the next month opening up to about 40 to 50 children. So we're really excited about that. We also have a new program in Richfield, 2 in St. George, 1 in Cedar, 1 in Wayne County that we've just started working with, and 1 in Washington County. So we're really cruising on working with family or with center care, and spending lots of money on there too, with some of this COVID money. Any questions on that for family child care or center care? Okay, next slide, please. We're doing our best to support RC and FFN to become licensed and getting the word out that they can participate in some of the things that they're not able to participate now. We have seen 1 person in St. George and 1 in Richfield that we have turned into family license, so we're excited about that. Okay, next slide, please. We've offered 1 Nature Explorer training, and it was so successful that we asked for a little bit of extra money so that we can do 2 more. And the next one is going to be in September, and then we'll do 1 probably 3 months after that. But we will market this to the state because it's been so successful, and there's so many people who really want to add this to their CCQS scores. So we're excited about that. So you'll be able to see some of that come through your Care About Child Care agencies so that we can fill that up. Okay, next slide. With this one, we truly feel that in order to maintain staff, that center directors need to have a really good onboarding program to help them bring in staff and really work with pathways so that they can be successful. So we have purchased an onboarding program through Child Care Biz, and we're going to pilot that with the program that our leadership cohort is going through right now. And they're really excited about this. We've even had some that were in our last cohort that would like to try it too. But as of right now, we're going to use it through here. And then if we find it successful, then we will purchase this for at least our area and do a large training so that center directors who want to be part of it will come in, be trained, and we'll give them the tool to use. So we're hoping that this will be successful and that they will be able to continue to save the staff that they have and use positive reinforcement, and that the staff will be able to really feel comfortable in their new jobs. Okay, and then next slide, please. Outreach in Southern Utah is going really good. We're trying to get into all of even the little communities as best we can. So we're using some COVID money to basically market Care About Child Care to all of these small communities in the rural areas. We've got a huge event coming up in Iron County, which is the Pumpkin Festival, and they're expecting about 2,000 families. So we're hoping to get that information out and possibly get some new providers that way also. So we'll market for new providers also. Okay, next slide. Thank you. This has been going really well. We've hired a full-time staff member who is running a leadership cohort. And we truly believe that if we train and work with the managers and the leaders of these child care programs and give them some really good tools on working with their staff, that we will have better staff retention in our area. And, excuse me, right now we're working with 6 programs. 5 of them are in our area, and 1 of them is out of our area because we wanted to try something that is total virtual and see if we can work with that one program up in Logan area. And this, we're finding out that this is, we're doing cohort meetings where the leaders are getting together, they're enjoying each other, they're getting some training on OBM and really walking that right through their program and all the way down to their staff and then to the children. So we're really seeing some real good results here, some really happy teachers, and some really excited managers to do this. And then the last one is our staff training. And just like Rebecca was saying, we want to build our staff in that professional development so that we can be more professional and more in providers, not business, but so that we can promote them better. So we are putting together a staff training, and I will train our staff so that we can be more professional and be able to do our jobs a little bit more professionally. Any questions?
Yeah. Yay. Oh, and we do have a question. Anna.
Yeah, thank you so much. Carrie, this is so exciting. Congratulations on all your amazing work. I'm not surprised, but it's nice
thank
to
you.
Hear it all put together. You know, us advocates types have been chatting with Rebecca and Nuna about, you know, what are some realistic funding requests to make to the state legislature based on what's already been done with COVID money and what could be done moving forward. And it does seem like from the presentations from our Care About Child Care offices, just seems like you guys are doing an amazing job actually developing new child care businesses and supporting providers throughout these different regions. And I'm wondering, just from a realistic perspective, in your region, how much more, so you mentioned like, oh, you know, if we had more money, we could do this or this or this. Like, let's say you were to continue to get the size of grant that you've been getting under COVID to do these things, or even more. Is that something that your organization could absorb and utilize effectively in the coming years to continue this excellent work?
I believe so. We would need more individuals to carry out some of these things that we're doing right now, because us directors are kind of running ragged a little bit by not only sticking with our budget, but with also the COVID budget too. But yeah, absolutely. The first year was a little rocky trying to figure things out, but now that we feel that we've figured these things out, we're really able to get to our people and get to our communities and really market our program, or the Care About Child Care program, in order to get family child care and center child care, and then to work with those programs. I think that, you know, we've got so many programs that are now working and in programs, working with centers, working with teachers. But I think, and this is just my personal opinion, but I think that sometimes the leaders and the owners and the directors are sometimes not fully participating. I think it's more of the staff. Okay. And I would like to see more of those leaders to be trained and really be able to work from the top down instead of maybe the middle down, if that makes any sense.
That does make sense. I really appreciate that. And I definitely appreciate what you said about the directors feeling like they're running a little bit ragged. I would totally would expect that. Kind of in the same vein of, you know, what's realistically possible, you know, based on the workforce availability in your area, if you were able to fund new positions to help with this work, to grow your team, to continue what you've been doing just because it's been so effective, would you be able to find people to hire that you feel could help you continue this work?
I believe so. Yeah. Our area is so large, and because we have three offices, we really have a large area to choose from. So I really think that that's very manageable.
Okay. Thank you for humoring me. It's very, very helpful. It seems like with all the great progress that the Care About Child Care offices have been making regionally, it would be a shame now that you've got it all figured out to have it stop, right? So thank
Correct.
You for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So, Anna, it looks like the Care About Child Care Metro could definitely keep going past this funding cycle. And they could also find qualified people to help support them as well.
Awesome. I am not surprised. I've just been, I know I gush about this every meeting, but I've just been so impressed about all the work that's gone into all these different efforts at the state level and at the different regions. And it just seems like it, you know, helps reduce some of the burden on our state staff too, to have these regional folks like be able to do some of that outreach. Don't worry, Rebecca, I'm not plotting any like giant appropriations asks without your okay. But appreciate that conversation, and thank you.
And I appreciate it. You can ask for the money, but then we'll just need some like staff to help implement it, right? So thank you.
Right. Okay, fair enough.
Carissa, I noticed that you have your hand up.
Yes, hi. I'm a center director, and first, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I wanted to thank you guys for the work that you do and the workforce bonuses. Every one of my staff members applied and were able to obtain the bonuses, and that has really helped morale in my building, and I just wanted to thank you for that. It has really helped with retention too, I think. So, which, you know, goes back to my littles. So, helps our families. So thank you for that. I wanted to ask if you have any more information about the new Child Care Center grant and what that looks like.
The Child Care Center grant? Sorry.
The new, to open a new center, the new Child Care Center grant?
Yeah, so with the startup grants,
so
far, those are grants that have been available, and we've increased the eligibility criteria and some of the funding amounts. I'm not sure, Krista, where you're located, but if you reach out to your Care About Child Care agency, then they can help give you information about the startup grants and how to access that and what that would cover and the eligibility for it.
Okay, perfect. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. We're just going through the list, making sure we got everybody. All
thank you. Is that Anna? Mm-hmm. Oh. Also, love for the state to fund ongoing bonuses for our early child care and education workers. I agree. $20 million a year seems like a steal for all that professionals do for our kids. Strong. You can always. All right. Okay, well, thank you. So we're going to move on to our OCC updates, and it looks like our OCC office is really highly represented here. So we're gonna start with Nancy Phillips with the infant and toddler grant update.
Thank you. Yep, I'll kick it off for our office. So I'm pleased to share that in response to some of the conversations that have taken place here at the advisory body, as well as conversations that we've had with our staff at the Office of Child Care, we are launching, in anticipated November, an infant and toddler materials and supplies grant. And so what we want to do is leverage some of that ARPA discretionary money with the potential that, depending on how successful this is and depending on what the uptake is, that we may be able to absorb it long term as a support for programs. And so this will be part of our CCQS in that it will be available to programs with a certified foundation of quality or building quality rating. So for those of you maybe not familiar, that means they don't have a high quality rating. And so we're really excited that what we can do is to provide a support to those programs that are maybe not at quality with some of the materials that they might need in those infant and toddler spaces. So we'll have more details emerge, but right now we're estimating about $1 million a year for 2 years, and then, like I mentioned, the potential to absorb it long-term into our budget, just depending on how things shake out. And we're finalizing the amounts for the program-specific grants, but like I said, it'll be in the ballpark of $1 million a year. And we're really excited that our friends at URPD are willing to partner with us on this, because we don't have all the bandwidth to do this in-house, and so we are excited that they will be helping programs with doing the ordering and purchasing and getting those materials shipped to them. And so, like I said, more details to come, but we're really excited. Hope this provides yet another incentive for programs to apply to CCQS, even if maybe they don't quite feel that they would get high quality. This is another one of the supports available to them.
Any idea what kind of a range-ish that providers can expect for the grant amount?
I don't want to say just because we're finalizing. Exactly. We're like playing around like with a chessboard of numbers, and so there's a lot of numbers out there. But we're hoping to make it significant enough that they're, you know, that you can actually order the supplies that are needed. You know, if something is missing or something needs to be upgraded or whatnot.
And is this going to be something like where you have a coach come in and help you determine what would be best for you, or is it more just kind of a application, you submit what you request and see what gets approved?
So that's a great question. The way that we're envisioning it is that the program, at the time that they learn that they get that certified foundation or building quality rating, would know that this is available to them, and that they would be able to submit a list of the supplies and materials that they need, and either the coach or an observer who is in their program could take a quick look at it and say, yeah, this looks to really align with some of those areas in particular that maybe in your observation just need a little bit of extra support, maybe curriculum, maybe some additional, you know, educational materials, whatever that might look like, to basically just give us the okay to send that over to URPD. So it'll all be kind of contained within what's already happening in CCQF, which was another one of our goals, because, you know, we don't have the bandwidth to maybe create a whole new grant, so we want it to be streamlined for programs as well as for our staff. So that's the idea. Any other questions? Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And we're going to move on to Lam with the stabilization grant update.
So nice to see everyone in person. So for our grant, we have disbursed more than $122 million year-to-date to all of the providers. Our team have approved over 1,000 applications, and of that, 56% is licensed family, and about 42% is licensed centers, and then followed by resident certificate at 1%, and commercial preschoolers at 1%. Our application at this point is closed, and so we are just really excited to move forward with what we have right now.
Great. Is there any questions, or No? Great. So we're going to go, we're going to move on to Carrie with the CCQF update.
I did have a quick question about that last one.
Okay.
Is there any way that just kind of knowing that there was an increase in the stabilization grant expenses as people were, changing their enrollment capacities and signing on before the final deadlines, I'm wondering if we have a breakdown about, like, per month how much we spent on the stabilization grants, just so we can kind of see where the trend line is if some version of this support were to be continued, what that would look like right now. Is that something that we could get maybe sent out to the advisory committee or presented at the next meeting?
Yes, we could do that for you.
Thank you.
There's one more. Okay. Are there plans to reopen the stabilization grant application for providers who missed the deadline?
That looks to me full answer. No. I'm sorry about that. The stabilization grant funding, it was funds that had really specific dates on when it had to be obligated and spended. And so we everything had to be obligated by September of this year, and so we can't add any more individuals to that stabilization grant. It would require a different funding stream, and so that application is closed because we have met that timeline, but we've also met the funding amount. In fact, we're a little bit over that funding amount, and so we just that's why it's closed, and we picked the closure date at the time we did.
Thank you. All right, Carrie, go ahead. Stand back up.
Okay. This is the child care quality system, which is not funded with COVID money, so it will continue on when that funding is away. But this is kind of, we have 115 centers currently rated that have a certified quality rating. You can see here, foundation of quality is 47%. And 25% are building, 24.5% high quality, and we have four programs that are high quality plus that are centers. The current data that you see on the bottom half of the screen is basically data that we report to the feds when we have to report our outcomes, and those are increases, so programs that have been certified before and got recertified that increased the number of points they got in different areas of the framework. So for the observation score, 60% of the programs when they recertified got a higher observation score than they did. So this is basically showing improvement in programs. For SAPQA, or the School Age Program Quality Assessment Observations, 62.5% increased their score. And points for Education of Director and Education of Caregivers, the increases aren't as high, but that's also partly because some of them are already at maximum, so they couldn't go any higher. But those are also areas we'll look at to see where we can offer more support. Overall point increase, 60% increase, and the increase, so if they moved up a rating, was 24%. That's a little bit bigger gap to have to go through to get your rating higher. So any questions on that for centers? Okay, then we'll go to the next slide, which is family child care. This is the first time we're able to report on family child care with certified quality ratings, so with the standard framework. So we're going in and doing observations and those things. So we have 41 family child care providers who have received observations and been scored. Four are certified foundation, 20 are building quality, and 17 are high quality. So I do want to add a little bit here because we had a total of 29 programs who received points in their observation that were high quality or high quality plus, but they didn't get the points on the rest of the framework. And so there's ways that we can work to help them do that, which is easier support than helping them change their observation score. So kudos to family child care providers, and kudos to Care About Child Care staff and people working with us that have been doing the peer learning community support groups for family child care, because most of them, I think I wrote the number down here, 78% of them participated in a peer learning group. And so we really think that helped them get ready for their observations. So that is pretty cool.
Is that 78% of the 17 that got high quality?
No, that's 78% of the 41. So, of the ones that got high quality, 11 of them participated. No,
really?
All but five. Five of the people that got high quality did not participate in the PLC.
Wow.
They did have practice observations and got feedback, which I think helped them too. So
they received some kind of help. Somewhere.
So they did get some kind of support.
High quality.
I mean, they stumble into it.
It would be difficult. Yeah, the rare exception that could stumble into high quality. Those gifted people with kids, which there are some out there. We are measuring for the FES when points are increased. Since we are comparing the temporary framework to the standard framework here, so the only components that lined up were education of the primary caregiver, where we saw 56% increase their points, and the total points on the framework, which 95% increased the total number of points, and the increase of rating was 61%. So we think it really helped them to participate in the temporary before they got to the standard framework too. So we're very excited about that. Any questions?
Anna.
Me again. Carrie, thank you. One quick question. Maybe. Is there any sort of feedback process whereby providers can ask questions or make suggestions about improvements to the CCQS? I know there was a lot of refining done in the beginning before things got launched based on feedback from folks as it's being implemented, especially with the family providers being relatively new and such a big disruption during COVID for the system. Are you regularly collecting feedback, tweaking the program? I know as I go around, I hear different random things or complaints about the implementation of the CCQS and whether people want to participate. Are there ongoing conversations about improvements or myth busting or whatever to help this grow in a way that people can see the value of it?
That is a really good question. And it ties back to what Rebecca talked about at the very beginning with the four cornerstones of our agency, because as our team is going through those cornerstones, we did decide that one of our gaps was we weren't getting feedback. We weren't asking regularly for feedback on the child care quality system, especially the processes involved with that. So that is something that we're working on currently.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Carrie.
You're welcome.
And so they have like a formal way that they'll do that. There is a CCQS subcommittee of this group that meets, and Joellen leads that group, and there are members, I'm not sure who here is members.
Looks like, I am.
Yeah, there's members of the OCC advisory board that participate on that group, so that would be a way that you could, providers could give feedback to those members, that they could bring it to that subcommittee meeting and discuss and talk about.
Yes, the members of the subcommittee, we have representatives from the UPCCA, the Utah Private Child Care Association, and the Professional Family Child Care Association are on that committee, so we are getting regular feedback from them on a monthly basis. Yes, Heather.
I was just going to add to that, we're also taking informal feedback at CCQS at utah.gov and talking about that within our policy and CCQS implementation meetings. So.
Okay. Did that answer your question, Anna?
It did. I do think it's really important, and this might be part of your conversations going forward anyway, to make sure that there are feedback mechanisms where
providers can give feedback that may be critical or perceived as negative, not directly to people who are involved in running the CCQS that might be involved in actually determining their rating. Whether or not that would actually be a conflict, I don't know, but it may suppress some feedback or make folks feel uncomfortable to provide, you know, that kind of critical perspective. So to make sure that people have lots of different entry points and that you're collecting information, not just by asking people to give you comments in different forums, but that, you know, you're hearing from the Care About Childcare directors, like what are people in your region saying, and making it easy for people to share information honestly where they don't worry it will impact their quality status at all.
Okay, thank you. We'll take that into account. Rebecca wrote it down. Thank you, Rebecca. Okay, next slide. The next thing is we have implemented our CCQS intensive support. So this is grants and contracts that we're entering into with programs to help them increase their rating on the child care quality system. It includes financial and on-site coaching kind of things. So we had 14 center-based programs apply. All 14 were accepted and are currently receiving coaching services. 6 of those were Foundation of Quality, 8 were Building Quality programs. So they're right now working. They're doing like beginning observations and end observations. So they've completed those ones in the beginning. I think they're all done. They're developing a quality improvement plan, which are really individualized for the program. Where do they want to improve their score on the child care quality system, on the framework? And family child care PLC cohorts are continuing. We'll be opening up intensive coaching to family child care early next year for those programs that have certified foundation and certified building quality ratings. Any questions about CCQS?
Thank you.
Thank you.
So Megan, with even more grant updates.
Not really worth me getting up to go and talk about 30 seconds. So I am just going to give you guys a quick update. We have our school readiness, in the realm of school readiness. We have a new team member on the school readiness team with USBE. Her name is Christina Barrera. And I think Jared's going to probably talk a little bit about her whenever he does his updates, so I'm not going to go too far into it. And then all of our contracts are becoming high quality, as well as our expanded student access have all been executed, which is great. They're all out and running. And sorry, I can't read the board. And then we just held all of our grant orientations for school readiness, so we're becoming high quality again. And our expanded student access, which were all held in August, greatly attended. And then our next school readiness board meeting will be September 21st, 12 p.m., right here in this room. Come enjoy the fun. And then our Eckers observations for our becoming high quality have kind of started with the conjunction of CCQS, but we're really going to get into them in October time. Okay, next slide. And then this is our out-of-school time update. All of our new contracts for the school year have been executed. Whether or not they've been signed, we're still waiting on some of those to come back from our organizations. And our grant orientations are being held in September. We've held our teen after-school prevention orientation last week. Our school age quality grant was yesterday. And then we have IGP and PQB coming up in the next couple of weeks. And then we are working with UAN to ensure that all of our OST standards for the PQA are aligning with CCQS standards. And that is our goal this year, is to ensure that anything that goes for OST work, everything aligns with CCQS. So UAN and OCC are working on that. And then we have asked we're asking for the legislation to sunset the DWS OCC requirement to host a PQE, Program Quality Enhancement Grant. As we have redefined our grants this past year to pull in all the elements of quality that was asked for in Senate Bill 202, so we feel like we're meeting all of the asks that came with that legislation, and so Rebecca has put in the request for that to be considered to be removed. And then We have our annual OST conference upcoming in November, then November
4th and 5th.
4th and 5th. Jumpstart. So if you have any staff within your school-age classrooms, definitely encourage them to attend. It's a great time. All right, that's me.
Any questions? Great. So we're going to move on to Heather with professional development.
Great. I will just present from here as well, if that's okay. We have some curriculum updates. Our first is the Ages and Stages courses, and these are we've had some feedback that we are not providing as much new curriculum, but these are very heavily revised curriculum with a lot of new content. So if you've taken Ages and Stages or Learning in the Early Years before, this is going to be a complete rewrite of this with the same type of content but very updated. So we have the these courses used to be Ages and Stages and Learning in the Early Years. We've kind of revamped them and reorganized them into two different Ages and Stages courses, but they still cover similar topic areas. So we have an Infant and Toddler Ages and Stages course, which is 10 clock hours, and a preschool and school age Ages and Stages course, which is also 10 clock hours. We're suggesting that people take both of those, even if they're working with a specific age group, because it's helpful to have the continuum across, and they work together. The other upcoming revision is our special needs course one, which is also heavily revised from the previous version. You can see some of the topic areas there. We have an overview of considerations needed when working with children with special needs, how to effectively work with families, a review of all the relevant laws and regulations, and learning about services and resources available within the community. We've been working with a subject matter expert who has over 10 years of experience working in special ed, has a master's, is working in leadership at a school. And so we're really excited to put that out there with all this updated information. And then I have one other slide. Another update we have is we're going to expand the eligibility for some of our stimulus scholarships so that we can spend more of that money. So an upcoming eligibility change would be for the three stimulus scholarships we're currently offering. So the Early Education Payback Program for college degrees, our Career Ladder College course, reimbursement program as well, and our conference registration scholarship. We're going to open those up to the other licensing and regulation types that we opened the workforce bonus up to. So our plan is to open that up to the DWS approved exempt centers, exempt out of school time programs, and the family, friend, and neighbor programs as well for those limited time scholarships. In addition, this is not on my slide, but you've heard me talk about the partnership that we have a contract with the Salt Lake Community College, and they've been providing business courses for us for both center-based and home-based programs. And they're putting on a summit that is geared towards business administration in childcare, and that's going to be on October 1st. It's free, and the registration information I can send to Montana so she can include that. So we encourage you to attend that as well. That's it. Any questions?
Do you happen to know why there are only 4 hours out of the 7 or whatever that will be credit hours?
I think it's held from, it would be, the hours would be for the sessions themselves. So for professional activity hours, it would be the actual sessions that you would get hours for. I'm not sure exactly how many hours.
Why you only get 4 when it's this long?
I will look into that. We can check in with them and make sure that they're giving the right amount of hours. But it is for seat time during the sessions that you get credit, not during for lunch or passing periods between the sessions. Thanks, Jane.
Sure.
Okay, great. Thank you. So, okay, Lisa for subsidy update.
There we go. The unmute button just popped up for me, so I hope everyone can hear me now.
Yeah.
We do, of course, keep track in OCC of our subsidy caseloads, and our caseloads have been going up recently. I'm sorry, I have to dial back to my notes. Sorry, I lost my spot there. Lost my screen didn't look right for a second. So you can see our overall caseload here of 6,582 families in the state fiscal year of 2019 increased slightly, well, decreased in the next couple of years, but now we've increased slightly in the state fiscal year of 2022 to approximately 6,800 families. And then that translates into 13,123 children. So we had a slight drop in 2021, but at this point our caseload exceeds the 2019 numbers. And if we can go to the next slide, please. So this slide talks about our percentage of approvals for new child care cases where the income of the family is over 60% of the state median income, which is income group 8. You can see in April through June of 2020, when we first implemented the higher income limits, we were running at just under 20%. State fiscal year 2021 went down a little bit, and that may correlate to that slight drop in caseload as well. But we've been going up just a little bit since then. So now we're running at right about 19-20%. This is with the, like I said, the higher income limits that were implemented under the COVID rules. So let's see. Next slide, please.
Actually, Lisa, I have a quick question about that slide.
We can go back, Montana.
Just with regards to what those percentages mean, is that above the 2019 baseline, or is that growth each year above the previous year?
Okay, so this is a total of the total number of approvals. How many were, so this looking back at the pre-pandemic income entry limits, this is a percentage of families who would not have qualified under the prior income limits. But this is a total. It's not plus 20% over the last year. It's just a total.
So for this year, out of all of the child care subsidies given, 20.27% of them were given to people in the income group 8.
Exactly, or above.
So we know how they've increased or decreased as a proportion of the overall subsidy population.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And these, like I said, these are just new applications. So they've met a higher entry level to become eligible for child care. So in this year, it's continued to rise a little bit.
And that's, so you said this is just new because it's the new subsidy approvals.
Correct. New
okay.
Cases.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. And now we'll go on to that last slide. Thank you. So in the past, like I said, our entry limit was 60%, and we went up to the 85%. Comparing state fiscal year 19 to 22, we have had a 3.57% caseload increase and a 5.22% increase in the number of children served, as we saw in the first slide there with the total caseload counts. And the caseload did go over 7,000 cases as of April. the largest, sorry, I kind of jumbled myself a little bit there. So we talked about the households with the income limits being higher now. We look at a breakdown of cases of approvals by household size. So interestingly, with those households, that 20.27% that are above the 60% state median income that would not have qualified under the previous income limits, the largest group of households helped by those higher income limits are household sizes of two. So that's a parent with one child. And they average 37.6% of the approvals of those that are over 60% of the state median income. And please let me know if you have any questions. Some of these numbers are a little hard to make sense of in your mind. So we have an average of 59 families approved each month, and again, those are new child care applications that are have an income over the 60% state median income. Okay, and in state fiscal year 22, $106 million was spent on subsidy, and that's an increase of $39.5 million since state fiscal year 2019, that should say 2019. And I heard did somebody have a question?
I was wondering what state fiscal year one was.
Oh, yeah. That was way under you. I don't think they had child care programs then. It was called Mom and Dad. So of that $106 million that we spent in state fiscal year 2022. That does include CRSA funds and TANF funds and things such as waiving the co-payments and SEP cases. And you'll see the last line there, the average monthly subsidy per child. This previous state fiscal year 22 was $674 a month. Today compared to $445 in state fiscal year 2019. So that's a pretty significant jump. And that's all I have.
Can you talk about that jump a little bit? That is dramatic increase. And I'm wondering if we're thinking it's just inflation and tuition rising. Is it the increase in the percentage of the market rate that subsidies are paying? Do you have a sense of how that like big 50% jump came about?
You know, I in the $106 million spent on subsidy, you're asking. I apologize. I really don't.
I meant the monthly subsidy per child.
Ah, okay. You know, my intuition would be, seeing the cases that we look at through the subsidy helpline all the time, that, well, we have more children on subsidy. And you know, honestly, I don't know. Maybe that is a question that maybe Nuna or Rebecca would be better able to address, because we have some increased funding. But that, I guess, really doesn't explain for me the difference in the average subsidy per child.
Yeah, we'll answer that, and then we can help me where I'm wrong. Probably the biggest difference is that we increased the subsidy payment rates, I believe twice in
we
that
did.
Period that it's showing. Once, at the start of the pandemic, we increased the subsidy rates to a higher percentile based on the 27th. The older market rate study, sorry, and then so that was an increase in payment rates. But then also with the new market rate study that was released last year with our new state plan, we increased the payment rates or the percentiles increased because the cost increased per percentile. Does that make sense? I think that was just, I confused that, but I think that's probably the biggest increase in the average subsidy per child. Is there anything else that you think went into that?
Yeah. And I would just say it is an average, right? So that's across various provider types with the different payment rates and ages.
That's correct, yes.
Does that also include the waiving of the the parent...
The co-payment?
You know, so Anne was the one who ran this data. That's a question I had too. She's not here to answer that. And so I think when we report on it next time, we can break it down. Because I suspect it was a pure, like, what we spent on subsidy divided by the number of children. But I might be wrong in that. So I'm not sure if it includes the co-payment.
Yeah, and like I said, it does include the CRSA funds. It also includes TANF funds. And it does include waiving the co-payments for parents as well. So that could be a significant difference.
The previous bullet did. The last one we need to verify for you.
Okay.
And I think one of the, thank you, Lisa, one of the questions that we also wanted to ask is that the last time we had a request that we provide a little bit more on subsidy information, some of the trends and whatnot, and whether or not this is getting at some of those questions. So if you guys have feedback on what you want to see shared next time, let us know.
This is fascinating. So thank you. Yes, I want to see this.
I think the thing that we talked about, you know, once you kind of narrow down on what we want to review, and then as we do each month, then we'll start to see trends from month to month, we'll be able to provide that.
Okay, that's all I have, unless somebody has more questions.
No, it doesn't look like it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I'm so sorry. No, it wasn't. I think as it relates to the subsidy trends, like I'd love seeing what the largest group of households helped by the higher income. I think it would also be interesting to know, like, age of children.
I would assume that we're serving more infants, or at least maybe it's just that we're paying more for infants, because it seems like that chunk would have to account for smaller children rather than older children, because older children aren't paid, like on average, they're generally not paid that much, right?
Yeah, we can get that.
Great. All those COVID babies.
Okay, so we're going to move on to our agency updates. We're going to start with Simone with childcare licensing.
Thank you. Good afternoon. And if Montana, you can help, you can let me present for a second. I did not submit a handout or a slide for your presentation because I want to refer you to our childcare licensing website and show you this information myself. Thank you. So, and the reason why I'm presenting this, well, can you see the slide now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The reason why I am presenting this is a question that was asked of me, and some people are saying that the number of childcare providers is diminishing or that we have less and less, but I want to show you that on the contrary, we have more and more childcare facilities, and that has been the trend for the past 4 or more years. So in our website, childcare licensing website, if you go to the parents and the public, you'll see down here a tab that says reports. If you click on that tab, you see a report that we put together that is called Total Facilities and Capacity Report. And this table is available to everyone. We update it very often. We increase the size so you can see it better. I hope the numbers are visible now.
Yes, thank you.
Are they invisible?
Yes, thank you.
So anyways, I wanted to point out these numbers, and please understand that there is no, as far as I know, there is no agency or entity that keeps an accurate number of facilities, childcare facilities, and the number of children in all those facilities in the state. I don't know of anyone that has an accurate account of facilities and number of children being cared for facilities. And there are multiple reasons why we have a lot of unlicensed facilities. We have a lot of facilities that are not only unlicensed, but are conducting business illegally. And so no one follows them or oversees them. And there are many exempt facilities that are not required to report to anyone. In addition to that, we don't have information on number of enrolled children. We have information on the number of children requested on the facility's capacity. So in a way, this is a little bit inaccurate. So we don't have a clear report in Utah that is comprehensive enough to be able to say these are the number of facilities that we have and these are the number of children that we have in those facilities. However, the number of facilities that we oversee, child care licensing, is great, and that information helps us making decisions and provides information for the Office of Child Care to make decisions also on subsidy and grants and all those important decisions to distribute money and subsidy. And this is what I want you to look at, and it is the numbers, how the numbers, the trend has been increasing facilities every month and through the years. So this is only showing the last 3 years, but it hasn't changed for the past 5 years. If you look at the numbers, for example, we have licensed centers. It used to be in 2020, 348 facilities. It went to 373. Now it is 409 facilities. There are multiple reasons for it. Yes, some facilities have closed, and COVID-19 created a lot of challenges for some facilities that had to close or temporarily close, but others open, or some of those facilities were taken over by other facilities or purchased by other facilities. So the numbers increased. And for example, for family, we had 749 facilities in 2020, and today we have 882. I actually checked the numbers earlier, 882. It is true that facilities such as residential certificate had a little decrease between 2020 and 2029, but look at the increase from 2021 to 2022, from 58 to 84. And some of those residential facilities, as Kerry was explaining before, the Care About Child Care agencies have been working really well with residential providers and have helped them become licensed. So the increase in licensed facilities is also due to the decrease in residential certificate providers. At the same time, we have family, friend, and neighbor providers that after have the experience of caring for children as an FFM provider, have decided to become either residential certificate or licensed providers. Another reason that is great for a number of home providers increase is that now we have given home providers the opportunity to expand their businesses and have more than one facility. Right now, up to two facilities, as long as they have a provider designee. And so, as you see, numbers have increased. Yes, we have increased center facilities also because of the new license type, the commercial preschool type. But as you see, well, we had in 2021 33 facilities, and now we have 52. But that does not get added to the centers. The center numbers have also increased independently. Anyways, I don't know if I'm saying it too fast. But all in all, what I wanted to show is that the number of facilities, licensed facilities, exempt facilities, number of facilities that we oversee have not reduced in the past years. The opposite is the story, that they have increased, and so we have more facilities available. Not enough. Still, Utah needs more facilities because there is no not enough childcare facilities for the number of parents and children that need access to facilities, but the numbers have been increasing. And I'll entertain any questions.
I just want to comment, I think this is fascinating to see not only the number of facilities increase, but the number of capacity. I can't see very well, but I mean, there's that 20,000 slots. And again, what I'd be interested to see, and I wish we could find a way, and so I'm curious if anyone has an idea about how to determine the enrollment for those slots. Have we increased enrollment by that? And so I do think that's one thing just system-wide where we have a deficiency, and I don't know if anyone has a great answer for that or how we can maybe get to know what that full population is.
Can I tell you what our FTE are?
Yeah.
Because mine's higher than my capacity.
Mm-hmm. I cannot hear what is being said.
Well, did you say it louder?
I just said that the CSM programs that most of us use tell us what the FTE is, based on our program. So my full-time enrollment is higher than what my capacity is. So I always have to watch that pretty closely. But
I wanted to kind of echo what Jamie was saying. I think that's probably one of the easiest ways to contemplate having real-time information about enrollment versus capacity is to increase the number of providers that are using child care management systems and ensure that the state system can talk to their systems so that that is just something that's available. I also wanted to note, I'm going to put this in the chat. I don't know if this will be available to everybody, but just with regard to the really low number of friends, family, and neighbor providers. This report was shared last week at a breakfast presentation at the Kempsey Gardner Institute. And, you know, a lot of people reported, a lot of working parents reported that if they aren't able to stay home with their kids themselves, one of their preferences is that they can have a family member care for their kids. And I know there are different perspectives about what that means for quality, but the truth of the matter is there are a lot of Utah families that would like to have their children in the home of a family member. And I feel like those numbers are way too low for what we're actually seeing in terms of parent demand in Utah. And you know, when we're talking about strategic plan and where OCC focuses in the next few years, I think advertising that that is a possibility, that that is something, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter that these people aren't maybe going to become part of the formal childcare workforce. They are adding to it temporarily, especially in those infant and toddler years when things are most expensive. So I think that is a real deficit. I don't think that's licensing's deficit, Simone, but since you put the graph up, that's kind of what made me think of that. And I feel like that's just a huge missed opportunity to help a lot of parents, especially with infants and toddlers, find the care that they're most comfortable with.
You're correct, Anna. I know Leah has her hands up, but you are correct, Anna. Keep in mind that this report is not completely accurate for FFM providers because of what you just said. It's very temporary. So we pull this report at the end of the month, and there are many family, friend, and neighbor providers that open and close really soon in between the month. So many of these providers are used only for a couple of weeks or not even a month, and so these numbers are fluctuating all the time. But you're right, we need more and more of family, friend, and neighbor providers.
Okay, Leah?
I spent 12 hours at Peach Days in Brigham City on Saturday. It was great fun. Lots of yummy food. But I was face-to-face with a lot of families looking for childcare, and I would love to see this data by county, because I know in Box Elder County where I was at, we have seen a decrease in childcare. And so I would hate for when we're looking at where to put our funding that this data wasn't pulled by county, because it would be interesting to see if there's areas that are now considered a child care desert where kind of before they weren't. I know that's anecdotally what we're seeing in our area, that there's areas where there is parents in Tremont and Garland area do not have the option right now. We have had a couple that just got licensed to go to regulated care. They have to either leave, which is hard because of the mountains, or they have to find somebody that's unregulated to take care of their kids. So, yeah, I would love to see this data by county.
We'll work on it. Okay. Tracy, I hope this helped. Not Tracy.
Rebecca. It was a great compliment. Thank you. I'll take calling Tracy, be called Tracy me basis.
No, Rebecca, I hope this is helpful and it addresses the question. Yes, we can go a little more in detail with by counties, But so far, again, this is statewide.
Thank you. Thank you, Simone.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to move on to Jared for the USBE.
Okay. So the first update is more of an information item because, you know, if you're involved in this, you should already know about it. But for the after-school programs, the annual orientation for the Intergenerational Poverty Interventions, or the IGPI grant, is next Tuesday, September 20th. And the annual orientation for the Program Quality Enhancement Grant is next Thursday, the 22nd. So if you are involved in either of those grants, please make sure that's on your calendar and be sure to attend those next, whichever one applies to you next week. Also, there's some questions about the 21st Century Grant Program. We're receiving about when will that open up. Watch for the grant opening. It's scheduled to be in either February or March, and so I should have more information at our November meeting, if not by January meeting, definitely. But you know, just keep that in mind that that's coming up. So I'm going to kind of go to the next slide. As far as CACFP updates, the first thing, again, this is probably an information update, you know, because if you're involved, you should know this already. The deadline for contract renewals for the CACFP program is coming up September 30th. So please get that in on time for your renewals. One information piece that they wanted me to pass on, this is a health advisory from last week. Please avoid purchasing or using Mother's Touch formula at this time. It turns out that the nutrition in this particular formula does not meet nutritional requirements for CACFP, and so this is information. Please do not purchase or use that for your programs at this time. Go ahead to the next slide, please. Now for some preschool updates. As Megan mentioned, we do have a new preschool specialist at Utah State Board of Education. With Jessica Mackley leaving to go back to the classroom, we hired last month Christina Barrera as the new preschool specialist. A lot of people are, you know, nodding and knowing you. She's amazing. She used to be a center director at the Jewish Community Center, and so she has the child care management background and experience. She has a rich history in providing professional learning. She has experience with grants. She's an amazing addition to our team. So just be aware that Christina Barrera is the new preschool specialist. As far as new information updates for the USBE preschool programs, first off is, this is exciting. This is fresh off the presses this month. We've been working with the Utah Education Network to compile a early learning resources hub. The Utah Education Network is the place where that currently has the strategies and activities, which I'll talk about in a moment, as well as a great place to find the standards. They've compiled a wealth of resources, a resource library for people in the early childhood education field. To access, you know, this hub, it can link you to a variety of different resources and materials, which should be a real treasure for helping teachers and programs to provide high quality early learning. Another thing, and there's a link to this, you know, in the PowerPoint that you should be able to access online. The USBE, as promised last time we met, recently released the parent guides. There are separate parent guides for 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds. Basically, what these parent guides are suggestions or strategies that parents can use. They're tied to the state core standards for 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds, but ideas and suggestions, recommendations for what parents can do working with their children to meet those learning expectations. Please do share them with your family engagement or your parent outreach work. So that, you know, it's in the hands of the parents so they can really be partners in children's education here. Next thing here is the early learning standards, strategies and activities. These are posted on the Utah Education Network site. These are specifically, you can get to them through the new early learning hub or through the Preschool Pathways page on UEN. This is something that's basically for each content area in the standards. The writing committee got feedback and put together basically ideas for what teachers can do to implement learning about each standard into the classrooms. As many of you may know, the English language arts standards are currently under revision on the state level, so these will be updated in, which probably still be about a year out, just with how things go. But one thing that we're asking for help and support from programs is, please steer teachers to these strategies and activities, and if they come across or they come up with additional ideas that they would like to share with the rest of the early learning community about things that they do in their classrooms to teach these English language arts standards, please have them reach out to us and submit those, because we're planning to update the strategies and activities as the new standards are rolled out. And also point them in the direction for the rest of the strategies and activities, because they're a tremendous resource that's definitely underused. Finally, I wanted to mention the Kindergarten Transition Toolkit. This is something that was developed in collaboration with the Head Start Collaboration Office, with the Office of Child Care, at Department of Workforce Services. It's currently under, hopefully, final revisions. fingers crossed over there. We're planning on doing some pilot rollout of the Kindergarten Transition Toolkit this year. But please keep that on your radar. Keep aware of that, because this should be a very valuable resource for both public and private preschool programs, child care centers to use in supporting the children in the transition into kindergarten. So that's the end of my updates. Are there any questions? Yes.
If a child care software management wanted to reach out to USBE so that they could align some of those features on that management software, who would they reach out to? A lot of times, providers want that information that's on those, but they don't. They have the old ones.
Right.
They mind us, and I'm like, ooh, how do I get the two of you to be able to talk to each other and get that most updated information?
So
who would they reach out to?
Okay, so would it be a matter of just putting the links to the current?
Well, I don't know. That's way too long for my...
Okay.
way too long.
Have them reach out to me, and I will look for who to contact.
Okay,
so,
thanks. Yeah, way too long. Sorry. I just know what I want, and I just want to figure out a way to arm wrestle with my CSM to
right.
go after
this would
it.
Probably, because of the wealth of resources that's there on the UEN site and now the UEN Early Learning Hub, that's probably a good interface that could be integrated into the learning management system or the but we'd have to coordinate with UEN. But reach out to me and I'll do some phone calls to see what.
We'll still be friends.
Okay.
Because you might have just paid off more than you realized. But
I guess, ask me in a couple of months and we might not be up. So we'll still be friends. Okay, any other questions?
It doesn't look like it. Thank you. So at this time, I want to ask the committee members if there's any other business or anything that at this time. Then look like it, or do look Katie.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, I just wanted to let people know that our annual Utah Early Childhood Conference is going to be March 17th and 18th at the University of Utah. And we are currently accepting applications for presenters. They're up on our website. They'll be up in 5 minutes. They're on hold for just a minute here. And as well as exhibitors and sponsorship opportunities. And registration will open up in November. So we're excited about that.
Thank you. No? Okay. This is the time that we ask for any public comment. Okay. well, now I get to say thank you for stopping in. And it looks like the rain and the storm kind of passed over, so we can get to our vehicles if we have to. Nice and dry. Our next meeting is November 9th. Same place, same time, same bat channel. And so I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I'll second.
And a second. Great. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Something I can do.
Yeah. It's been a while.